Sorry to keep you waiting.
Morning.
Morning.
So Sam, just to remind you, and I'm wondering if that is true.
Right.
No. We'll be on time, I think, by the 10 o'clock time.
You could ask the council if they would let you when you're talking. But otherwise.
Amanda just stepped out.
Sure.
Excuse me.
It's gonna be late.
Good morning. Today is Wednesday, June 17th. This is the 9:30 session of the Portland City Council. We'll come to order. Sue, please call the roll.
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Leonard. Fritz.
Here.
Adams.
Here. Apologize for being late. Can you please read the title for Council Communications number 815?
Request of Henry Kane to address Council regarding relevant information.
Mr. Kane, good morning. Welcome to the City Council. You just need to give us your first and last name, and you'll have 3 minutes, and that clock in front of you helps count down your time.
Okay. Your office has my latest written testimony. It reproduces the article in the Stump, the Oregonian, and then 11 pages of very informed comment. Noticeable. Everybody seems to know how to spell. The major reason I'm here is that, from what I can gather, the city is not protecting itself from a repetition of what happened with Portland Family Entertainment. They walked, and the city was stuck, and is still paying for the bond. As I see it, the city intends to allow the signatory on a final agreement to be Peregrine, a Delaware limited liability corporation. And the experience elsewhere, and I've written my earlier testimony, is that when there's trouble, the assets of the corporation are taken out and the taxpayer is stuck. I don't want to see a repetition of that. Particularly, we're not talking about 1 or 2 million. We're talking about maybe 100 million. Nothing is ever built for what it costs. The greatest good for the greatest number is a rule of life. And as I read the papers, there'll be 15 soccer games and 72 or so baseball games. So it would appear to me that in terms of income, that somebody would select the game that produces the most revenue. And I commend Commissioner Fritz for calling to my attention the overhead cost of urban renewal bonds. And consultant's report is very, very helpful to the opponents who are little homeowners and the like, and not members of the Arlington Club. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kane. Appreciate your testimony. Sue, would you please read the title for Council Communications 816?
Request of Ulysses Hardiman to address Council regarding prevarications and official misconduct.
Good morning. Welcome
Good morning,
to
Your Honor.
Welcome to the City Council. Glad you're here. You just have, give us your first and last name, and you have 3 minutes.
Yeah, I'm Ulysses Hardiman, Commissioner Fritz Salzman. So several of you have now had the pleasure of addressing this August Assembly. I hope that you will forgive me if I beg off and seek a postponement. I haven't been able so far to get my car back and get to work out there. And the deal I had on my apartment, I've lost that apartment also. But please bear with me and allow me that I will postpone and address you at a later date.
Thank you, sir, very much. Appreciate
you
coming
so
to City Council.
That was really nice of you to come and say that you couldn't speak today. I appreciate that.
Sue, could you please read the council communications item 817?
Request of David Regan to address council regarding the anti-camping law.
Yeah, we bring people up individually.
Amanda, can I? Okay, that's fine. I was going to read. No, never mind. Everybody's gone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to the City Council. We're glad you're here.
Thank you. My name is David Regan. I have been before you a couple of times wearing my gardening hat and hoping that you will like the idea of green work projects for homeless people, combining housing with work programs can be very inexpensive. But today, we take a chance at being disliked by you for coming to you and asking you to do something immediately, we feel we have to do it. There are a lot of people suffering. You've seen the numbers of homeless people are rising very fast. And the big issue is not so much where to sit safely. I thank you for getting back to me, Ms. Fritz. I sent letters to each of you on May 27th asking you to consider GreenWorks projects for homeless people. Amanda is the only one who's written back so far, and I appreciate that. But the issue today is more immediate. It has to do with sleeplessness. Thousands of people who are literally forced to hide in order to legally sleep within the city limits. And you can say, well, let the bums go out to the edge of the city then. Well, most of them don't know of any other food sources other than some of the programs downtown or some of the programs in the inner city. And many of them are in poor health. On any given day, they don't have mass transit fare. And they really need to sleep close to services, and they are literally forced to hide. This is especially dangerous for women who, if they do a good job hiding so that they can get a good night's sleep, they're in danger of assault in an unseen place. And this has happened again and again. I believe that what we have here is an emergency, nothing short of an emergency. And for you to sit and not call it that, I think is kind of a cold-hearted dereliction of duty. I know I'm not popular already, so I don't care. It's a dereliction of duty, sir. The mayor has the power to declare an emergency, and I want to urge each of the council members to urge him to do so, because for thousands of people, there is already an emergency. And we have a petition that we've given you. This is an ongoing effort. There will be more coming into your offices. If you look at the top page, you'll see the comment of the Secretary for Dignity Village, where I was at last night, and she pointed out that they're turning away people every day who need a place to stay. And, you know, the pat answer is, oh, we got Dignity Village. That's fine for 60 people. The statewide count is 17,000 without shelter in January of this year. At least half of them are in the Portland area. Please do something. Please do something. I thank you.
Mr. Regan, could I just respond to one thing? I met with Sally Erickson, the city's homeless coordinator, yesterday. And she told me she had met with you and right. discussed your proposal. So she's actually the senior person in my housing bureau on this issue. I appreciate you taking time to give her the materials, and I've asked her to look at them and get back to me.
And that way it can be said that you have responded, and I thank you for that too. Thank you for responding.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks. Sue, could you please read the title for Council Communications 818?
Request of Leo Rhodes to address Council regarding the anti-camping law.
Hello, formal request because Leo Rhodes is homeless and has health problems this morning that Linda McDowell, a member of the League of Women Voters. Oh, he is here. Very good.
Good morning, Mr. Rhodes. Welcome. You just need to give us your first and last name, and you'll have 3 minutes.
Yeah, hi. My name is Leo Rhodes, and I am a homeless person. I just want to thank you first for letting me speak to you. I've seen in the real or street roots that you are having the resource access center, and it's kind of in play right now, which is really great to hear. But talking about homelessness, we have a lot of rental cops out there that are actually harassing the homeless. I was sleeping outside one time out of the rain and sleeping comfortably, and then I was asked to leave. 2 o'clock in the morning, nobody around, and it's raining, pouring down. I asked where I could go, and they said, "I don't know, but you just can't be here." Another time, it was pouring down rain in the wintertime. I went underneath the Burnside Bridge to get warm or to keep dry out of the rain. Again, a rental cop came on out and told me I cannot stand there. Now, you know, if you treat people like animals, they will be animals, and that's what you're getting right now. When you have these rental cops that don't have any place where, or tell these people where they can go, and you just tell them you have to go. That's why people are acting the way they are, homeless people, because they have no place to go. Also, I had a rude awakening one morning where somebody hit me over the head, not once, but twice. And I'm kind of hesitant to tell you that because I know what you're going to say. Oh, well, we need more city ordinances. We need more laws. We need more police. No, we don't need that. What we need is shelters right now. We need a tent city. You keep talking about Dignity Village and how you like Dignity Village, and it's great. And we, like Street Roots, had a good article on that and how they're progressing really great. These homeless individuals had an entrepreneur that came down to them and talked to them about how to raise money. Now, these are homeless individuals that aren't supposed to have brains. That's what we get from the non-homeless people, that these people can't control themselves. Look at them. They're prospering. They're productive citizens. Why? Because they have a place to go, someplace safe and secure. If they don't, then you have wild animals out there, and that's what you guys are breeding right now. You know, one of the things I always see is Los Angeles or California. You see a lot of homeless people out there, and I've talked to some ladies that have been out there, and they tell me, yeah, you look as far as I can see, there's tents all the way down these streets. I'm trying to prevent that. We are trying to prevent that. We don't want to see that. We want to have some structure here. That's what we're asking for. And in the long run, it's a lot cheaper than your programs right now with shelters. Just basic shelter is all we need. I have a little bit more on this right here and also my email address. I only have one copy, though, but if you like, I can give it to you guys and you guys can get back to me.
Sir, my office is, if you go out the door, it's to the right. Would you leave your contact information with my receptionist?
Yes, it's right here in this, and I'd like for all of you to get a copy of this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rhodes, for your comments today. Sue, can you please read the title for council calendar item 819?
Request of Shelby Spencer to address council regarding the sit-lie ordinance.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council.
Hi, my name's Shelby Spencer, and I was just here to talk once again about the sit-lie ordinance, about the anti-camping ordinances. Like Leo, I'm also a member of the homeless community, although a little gussied up today. There's just been a consistent and systematic brutality against people in the homeless community, not just in a political and financial sense by keeping us from having places to go, but in a really physical sense. Personally, I've had my stuff slashed, of course, been woken up in the middle of the night. I've had my ribs kicked. Last weekend, I got maced. And these things are not okay. And if they were happening to people that had jobs, or to people that had a roof over their head, it wouldn't be looked at as okay. But as soon as you just lose these possessions, you become less of a person. And that's appalling to me. And there's just such a stereotype of what's going to happen if you're homeless. You're going to be on drugs. You're going to be possibly mentally retarded or schizophrenic. Personally, I'm going to high school. Actually, well, graduated 2 weeks ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But I feel that it's really, really difficult to be doing that when you're going to be woken up 5 or 6 times a night and told that you're an eyesore or that you're bothering people by sleeping. I remember, I think it was Sandra McDonough, I don't know how to pronounce that, was talking about expanding the sit-lie ordinance past Portland. It blows my mind how any of you guys can even consider keeping it in effect. The people that you're hurting, we're not to be discounted just because maybe we don't have the same material possessions as you. It's truly a state of emergency for us. There are so many people being hurt by this, and it just blows my mind that it's something that can be just swept off the table. Did you want me to cede time? Do you want?
We're not allowed to do that here.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't really understand the laws. But and like people have been saying all of today, Dignity Village is not enough. And there is no reason that we can't have another hassle-free camping zone. You can't tell people, hey, get out of here, and expect them to just disappear. I mean, we don't cease to exist when you tell us to leave. And we don't come back with houses and jobs automatically. That's not something that happens. And the fact that the homeless problem is looked at as a problem and as something that can only be tackled through philanthropy or through increasing the laws just, I don't know, it bugs me a little. For a lot of us, homelessness isn't something to be ashamed of, and it shouldn't be something to be ashamed of. I feel that a lot of the laws that are in place right now, and not just the anti-camping ordinance, are pretty classist. When we tried to come into the city council meeting today, I don't own a pair of shoes. I'm borrowing my boyfriend's shoes right now, and he was asked to leave for not owning shoes. That's not okay.
I'm sorry your time is up. Really appreciate your comments today. Well spoken. I just wanted to reiterate this city council and this budget, although we're cutting a lot of programs, is actually increased funding for homelessness and housing. This city council is going to adopt a budget that increases funding for homelessness and housing, affordable housing programs, in spite of the fact that we're cutting the budget in other areas. So this is the public's time to comment, and that's why we're sitting up here. Our job is to listen today, but I didn't want you to think that we hear and understand the issues and are working mightily on them. Our point person is the Housing Commissioner, Nick Fish, and he's the one that we'll be getting back to. Thank you. All right, unless there's objection, council calendar item time certain 8:20 is moved back to Commissioner Fish's office.
Thank you.
And can you please read the title for time certain, 8:21?
Could we do the consent agenda?
Oh, I'm sorry, you're right.
And I've had a request for two polls, number 833 and also 843.
Is there anyone else that would like to pull any other item from?
So when did you get those requests?
833 this morning from your office. And then 8:43, just before the meeting started, a citizen wants to make a comment.
Okay. Any other items to pull from the consent agenda?
So just to be clear, 8:33, Mayor, we're asking that that be returned to my office.
Unless there's objections, 8:33 is returned to Commissioner Fish's office. All right. Sue, would you please call the roll on the consent agenda?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard? Fritz?
Aye.
And Adams?
Aye. Now would you please read the title for council calendar time certain item 8:21. Please.
Approve amended and restated River District Urban Renewal Plan to expand boundaries by a net 41.98 acres, increase maximum indebtedness by approximately $325 million, and extend expiration date to June 30, 2021.
And I'd like to move to substitute what was turned into the auditor for what we've distributed to council. There is no substantive difference, just some Scribner's errors that are improved and some legal citations that are corrected.
I move the amended ordinance.
It's been moved and seconded to substitute this ordinance. Any discussion? Please call the roll.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz? Adams?
Aye. Substitute is approved. This morning, we are voting to approve the amended and restated River District Urban Renewal Plan to expand the boundaries, increase the maximum indebtedness, and extend the expiration date to June 20th, 2021. In these challenging times, the plan, once adopted, will allow the city and the Portland Development Commission to embark on a worthy series of economic development projects designed to improve the vitality of our community and provide hundreds of new jobs. The council approved the amended and restated River District Urban Renewal Plan in June 2008. This plan received support letters and letters of agreement from all overlapping taxing jurisdictions. It was appealed and remanded by the Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals in January of this year. Over this last year, funding for critical projects has been put on hold. These projects would have included the Resource Access Center, improvements to Union Station, redevelopment of Centennial Mills, and the 10th and Yamhill Parking Garage project, and numerous other projects in Old Town Chinatown that had the potential to put hundreds of Portlanders back to work. With these projects on hold, however, we have lost opportunities in a critical time, and it would have helped the most vulnerable citizens of Portland, those unemployed. While some areas in the River District have had great success during the first 10 years of the life of the district, other areas are still in need of revitalization. Investing in these areas would create significant jobs and would further the citywide economic development goals. We're going to hear from Linda Mang, Eric Iverson, Bob Alexander, and Elaine Howard first. Come on up. Good morning. Welcome to the City Council. Ms. Mang, are you going to start first?
I am. Thank you. Good morning. Linda Mang from the City Attorney's Office. As the mayor stated, just about a year ago, the council approved an amendment to expand the River District Urban Renewal Area. The amendment was appealed to LUBA and remanded, and we're bringing back the amendment today with a revised report and findings in response to the LUBA remand. The appeal of the original amendment raised numerous issues. LUBA rejected most of those arguments that were made, but did remand on 2 points. Those points relate to findings that are required to comply with specific statutory requirements of the Urban Renewal Statute. First, LUBA held that part of the amendment process, the council was required to find, based on substantial evidence, that blight exists in the urban renewal area as a whole. In the original amendment, we relied on the earlier findings of blight for the original district and focused only on blight in the added areas. The second point that LUBA raised or held was that where an individual blighted area was added to the amendment, there had to be an explicit finding that buildings that we relied on as blighted were unfit or unsafe to occupy, and that's part of the statutory language. And they had to be unfit and unsafe because of certain specified conditions. In the original report, those conditions were identified, but the explicit finding of unfit or unsafe to occupy was not made. And so LUBA remanded on that point as well. So these revised findings and report that we bring to you address those issues. And as one technical matter, the record was delivered to the auditor, and I would like to incorporate that record here, the record of the original ordinance, as part of this record as well. And now I'll turn it over to General Counsel for PDC.
Thank you. My name is Eric Iverson. I'm General Counsel with PDC. First of all, I'd like to reiterate that the amended plan for the River District, which calls for an impressive list of job-producing economic development projects, and which this council unanimously approved last year, is before you again unchanged. The only difference is this year we have delivered to you a revised report, which we are confident corrects the deficiencies highlighted by Luba last year and noted by Linda just a few moments ago. In the interim, PDC has hired an impressive list of respected experts in various disciplines to help collect data for the new report and provide evidence and findings that meet the statutory requirements. What you have before you now, the new report, is what we believe is the most comprehensive urban renewal report that has ever been produced in the state of Oregon. While pure volume alone does not necessarily equate to quality, I would like to point out that the original report that supported the adoption of the River District originally 11 years ago was 21 pages in length. This report, at 137 pages and filled with data and statistics that are quite impressive, I think adequately and fully support what we were trying to prove today. It is your charge, based on this revised report, to find that the River District area as a whole is blighted. Before proceeding further, I think it is important to note, particularly to the public and the press, that the term blight, as used in the Urban Renewal Statute, and as applies in this case, is quite different than and quite broader than how that use is normally used in ordinary discourse. The statutory definition is far, 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 far broader than what most people think of as blight in the Oliver Twist type of sense. It includes inadequate open spaces. It includes findings of lack of proper utilization of areas within the district, resulting in unproductive land uses or conditions. And in fact, in this year's Luba opinion, Luba expressly upheld the city's finding that underutilization of development capacity constitutes an indicia of blight. It also expressly noted that the existence of modern, non-blighted properties within the district do not disqualify the district from being found to be blighted as a whole. Finally, the report is filled with charts and maps that represent where specific indices of blight occur within the expanded district. But I would like to bring to your attention right now a specific map that, the map before you, I think, reminds you as to what the new and expanded total river district as amended will include. The colored areas are the new areas. The white area is the original area. And if we can move to the next one, there it is. This chart shows every parcel within the district. Where a parcel is filled with a color, at least one of the multiple indices of blight exist. Although there is no requirement that multiple indices of blight be found for a parcel for that parcel to be found blighted, the darker areas show that there are multiple indices of blight that occur with regards to that particular parcel. The report lays this out parcel by parcel or area by area in quite some detail. It is your charge to review the amended plan and the new supporting report and make the necessary findings that the River District as a whole meets the statutory definition of blight and that the proposed projects to be funded by the plan are in the best interests of the health and welfare of the city and the district. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Alexander.
Thank you. To initiate the blight findings that are before you today, in the original River District, as well as the amendment areas, we employed three teams of experts to establish whether the conditions were present that would meet the statutory definitions of blight. These experts were chosen to look at three areas of their expertise: AMEC, Earth and Environmental, is to evaluate the potential for soil contamination, contaminated water; KPFF, Consulting Engineers, a visual assessment of building condition and seismic requirements; and third, PBS Engineering and Environmental, to look at hazardous buildings, PCBs, lead paint, asbestos. Their task was to identify existing conditions throughout the original River District and the amendment areas using professional judgment. These firms were selected as having experience with remediation, and many have worked on projects or buildings within the amendment area. The report before you includes the analysis of the entire area, both the original area as well as the amended area. We analyzed over 470 parcels within the area and over 400 buildings to determine existing conditions. In addition, we used a 2007 study by the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to review the development capacity. We also utilized the assessor's records to analyze assessed values of these properties and to identify improvement to land ratios, which you'll hear about in just a moment. Elaine Howard is under contract to assist us in preparing the report to the Urban Renewal Plan and also worked on the report before you. She will detail several examples of those blight findings.
Hi, I'm Elaine Howard. I've worked on this report, the original report, and the LUBA remand report. As shown and Mr. Iverson stated, this is the most extensive report I have ever worked on, and I believe clearly documents that there is blight in the existing area and in the amended area as a whole. It contains many facts supporting the analysis that blight exists with the original area and the amended area, and it covers this information in detail. The testimony I'm going to give will actually only cover two of the indicators of blight as statutorily recited in ORS, structures in need of upgrading and underutilization of property. There are many other facts within the report, but we certainly don't have time to go through the entire report for you today. The map in Figure 8 of the report, which is now on your screen and on page 82, represents blight under one of the statutory definitions of 457.010, and that definition is the existence of buildings and structures used or intended to be used for living, commercial, industrial, or other purposes, or any combination of those uses that are unfit or unsafe to occupy for the purposes because of any one or a combination of the following. One of those subsections is defective design and quality of physical construction. This particular blight definition has the most occurrences within the original area and the amended area. It includes buildings which were identified through the visual survey as needing rehabilitation and improved maintenance. It includes those buildings which are not up to current seismic codes, may have lead-based paint, the presence of asbestos, or PCBs. In addition, 60% of the buildings within the original area are over 50 years old. While this alone is not an indicator of blight, when it's used in conjunction with the other indications, it is a significant fact. As you can readily see by your map, which shows where these conditions exist, this indicia of blight is prevalent throughout the amended and restated area, including the original River District area, and these buildings are located through the area as a whole. Figure 9 shows the existence of blight in accordance with another section of ORS, subsection 1H, which is a growing or total lack of proper utilization of areas resulting in a stagnant and unproductive condition of land potentially useful and valuable for contributing to the public health, safety, and welfare. This condition is generally thought of as an economic condition identified in this report in three main areas: the improvement to land ratio analysis, the 2007 Central Portland Development Capacity Study, and the presence of contaminated soils or groundwater. The improvement to land ratio typically tells us whether there should be additional value in an improvement on a property. For example, vacant land, parking lots, one or two-story buildings are generally considered an underdevelopment of a piece of property, which has the capacity designated in the zoning code for increased development. In the improvement to land value analysis, an expert identified the expected improvement to land ratio capacity for each of different subdistricts within the total area, understanding that there are different subsets that might have more increased development than others. This analysis was then combined with an analysis of the assessor's information about the actual value of the improvements to the land. And from this analysis, parcels were determined to be whether they were below what could be expected as an improvement to land ratio analysis. There are numerous parcels within the area that are below those established factors. In addition, the city's 2007 development capacity study conducted by the then Bureau of Planning identified parcels that were underdeveloped within the central city. These were based on a floor area racial capacity of the block and to what extent that capacity was fulfilled. What this means is if a property has established in the zoning code a floor area ratio of 4 to 1, you expect to see 4 floors of development to the 1 floor of land area. If a building has less than that, it would be underdeveloped and should be redeveloped in the future to meet the expectations of our zoning code. There are many parcels within the area that fell beneath those standards as identified in the city's development capacity study. This data reinforces the improvement to land ratio data. It's just looking at it in a different way, that there are many parcels underdeveloped within the area. The contamination of groundwater and soils increases the cost of development, thereby causing a negative impact on growth, resulting in a stagnant and unproductive condition of land. And the prevalence of contamination in the area is significant. These factors are shown on this map, so every parcel that has a red on it contains one of those factors of blight. Figure 10, which Mr. Iverson brought up in the beginning, shows the different findings of blight within the area. So anything that's on this map can either be shown as having a building condition which needs to be rehabilitated. It might have seismic issues, PCBs, lead-based paint, ground or water contamination, a low improvement to land ratio value, or underdeveloped by the FAR study. Again, as Mr. Iverson said, the areas in white are typically those areas that have been redeveloped through the use of urban renewal assistance or as a result of urban renewal assistance. So those areas show no contamination, and you would hope for that in an area that is over 10 years old. You would hope that there is progress within the area. The other areas start with a pale yellow, goes to red. If it only has one indicator of blight, according to those factors that I detailed, then it's a pale yellow. If it has all of the indicators of blight, it's red. So what this map shows you is throughout the area, both the original River District area and the amended area, there is plenty of blight in accordance with what ORS describes as blight.
Thank you, Elaine. While this discussion you've just heard is the technical one about meeting the statutory definitions of blight, this amendment is really about jobs, affordable housing, assistance to the homeless, redevelopment of challenged or contaminated properties. This district is about halfway through its 20-year life, and while it has had some great success in some areas, others are very challenged and need continued assistance. I believe there's some following speakers which will address some of these issues and concerns.
Discussions with Council. Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. Linda, could I ask you a couple questions? The charts that you've given us, when you compare the original submission, the original findings, and these proposed amended findings, is it fair to say that there is a substantial increase in the amount of actual blight findings that are now included in this report and the recommended findings?
Yes, there's substantial increase in the findings. There's substantial increase in the evidence that's provided to support the findings. The findings are the specific ones we believe we need to make, but there's been a vast increase in the amount of information that's provided to support those findings on the points that Luba remanded on.
And I was going to say, and that's in conformity with what Luba directed us
yes,
to do.
Yes, exactly.
And a question that I've been asked a lot in a lot of the communication that I've received is, how much blight do you have to show in order to qualify? And I guess that's a legal question as well as what sort of, you know, practically what Luba has shown. But in plain English, can you tell us what the city's position is in terms of how much blight you have to show?
Well, I don't know that there's going to be a hard and fast rule. What you have to be able to say is that there's blight in the district as a whole. And I think that when, just visually, when you look at these maps, you can see that the blight is not just in one location. It's not just in a tight little area and the rest of the district doesn't have it. It is going to be a judgment decision that the council makes to find that there's blight in the district as a whole based on the indications that are identified in the statute and then laid out in the report that we have
And my final question is, in some of the communication that I've received and some of the briefings, this whole topic provokes very passionate views, pro and con on urban renewal, pro and con in terms of specific projects that might be funded, pro and con in terms of city priorities. Could you again just remind us, what's the specific issue before council? You're asking for us to look at the two issues that were remanded, and could you just restate them for us?
Yes, the two issues that LUBA remanded on were the fact that there was not a finding in the previous version of this amendment that determined that there was blight existing in the original district as well as the amended areas. And what LUBA said was that the council made a finding of blight 10 years ago. There was a lot of development that went on, and it because the substantial amendment that we are proposing requires that you go through the same process you do when you adopt a new urban renewal area, LUBA determined that that meant that you had to go back and find that there was blight in the whole area. And they reiterated that doesn't mean that every single parcel has to be blighted, but the council has to have evidence and make a finding that there's blight in the entire area. And that's what's shown on these maps incorporates all of that. The work that's done supports that. The other finding is a somewhat technical. The other issue is a somewhat technical issue of statutory interpretation, that when you're relying on a particular building as showing blight, the statute requires that you find the building is unfit or unsafe to occupy based on certain specified conditions. And the previous iteration of this amendment found those specified conditions but did not make the interim finding or the ultimate finding there that because of those conditions, the building was unfit or unsafe to occupy. So we have gone back and provided the information and made those specific findings based on the statutory criteria.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fritz.
I'm going to follow up on Commissioner Fish's questions. Looking at the map, It seems we were very careful in the expansion area to gerrymander the line so that we pretty much only included blighted properties in that. I'm wondering if we were in a new urban renewal district, how much percentage of it can be not blighted, this area here? Would we have drawn the line to exclude that, or would we have included those, that the newly developed properties, in order to be able to have that tax, that increment to help the rest of the district?
Well, because this property, and Eric, if you have other things to add, please feel free, but because this urban renewal area is halfway through its development life, we're 10 years into a 20-year plan, the part that is in white is the part that's been developed.
I understand.
And so
that.
if you took that out, you would be taking out basically what we are relying on to repay the bonds that were issued to do the development. So I'm having a hard time trying to think
so
about
you
whether
take those out now because they're still being used to pay off the bonds.
Right. And okay. If you were going to do a new district, I'm not sure. I'm just having a hard time trying to imagine what it is that you would do if you were just starting over, because right now we're in the middle of a renewal process.
In a new district, does pretty much all of it have to be blighted? No.
No.
We have a concept of whether it's 50%, 75%?
There's really not a number. So it is a the concept, the idea is that the council has to find that the area as a whole is blighted. And some of it is what makes sense to hook together. The original district is much more of a unit, and the added areas, as you note, are more squiggly lines. Part of that, I think, is because some of those came out of other urban renewal areas and were added because of that. But districts have lots of different shapes. There's not a particular shape that you have to have.
Thank you. And then maybe over the course of the next week when we're considering this before we vote, I'd be interested to hear about the assessment of the risk of how confident we are in our current findings and to get some more information on the pros and cons. And my understanding is that we're not dealing with the satellite district. That was a different amendment and that's not up for consideration today.
That was a separate amendment, yes.
Commissioner Saltzman.
I just kind of wanted to follow up on the line of questioning Commissioner Fritz was pursuing. So we're not establishing any kind of a notion of percentage of property that needs to be in blight in a future URA, urban renewal area?
No, there's not a specific percentage. The statute is not that specific, and it is a judgment. Initially, it's a judgment by the council.
So, and by the same token, then, since blight is not sort of the Oliver Twist notion that most of us think of urban blight, but is indeed very broad, so it is conceivable we could form a future urban renewal area that would have maybe a small percentage of properties that meet the blight definition.
Well,
I mean, it could be 10% of the properties, and we could probably still, under these broad statutory definitions of blight, we could still make a finding that the area is in blight.
Well, I think
the entire urban renewal area.
I think there's a difference in the fact that the definition of blight is broad. You still have to have blight, and although it may not be a common concept of blight, you still have to have blight. So I don't think it means the broad definition doesn't mean you don't have to have blight. You still have to have blight that meets that definition.
And I would right, but I mean, isn't it true that there's virtually nowhere in the city you could go and not find, you know, contaminated soil, lead paint, asbestos in buildings, underutilization of FAR ratios? I mean, there's literally no place you could go and not find some of those conditions and produce a, you know, some sort of a composite map that shows blight.
And that would be blight, though. It wouldn't mean that you only had a small percentage of blight. That would be actual blight under the statute.
But I directly on what you're saying, neither the statute nor the courts have ever determined on a percentage ratio what needs to be present, what percentage of the district has to be blighted for the area as a whole to be blighted. I would think, based on other cases, that the court would look at whether you in good faith were looking at a substantial amount of blight in a district. I would think you would have problems with the other option you gave or the other scenario where you went in with a very small percentage of blight and tried to justify the area as a whole being blighted. I think there's, in this case, is quite different than the other, but we do not have a either statutory or judicially adopted percentage that is necessary to meet that standard.
And substantial doesn't necessarily mean 50% or more. Or I mean,
it hasn't been defined.
It needs to be defined, right? Okay.
But
okay.
Which is one of the reasons we wanted to put this in front of you, which was to show you, to make your own good faith judgment.
Sure. Well, okay. My other question, I think, probably is to Bob, and that is the Lincoln Building, the McCoy Building. Those are now in according to what criterion? Or criteria?
They're included in the amendment areas. The Lincoln Building is there as a result of seismic, primarily. I'm going to have to check back to see if there's other indices of blight with that particular one. The McCoy is the same thing with similar issues. I would say that the issue of challenge here in the LUBA direction to us, they did not find a deficiency in the blight findings in the amendment areas, which were discussed before, but it was the original river district, which we had not done blight findings for, frankly, because it had never been done before statewide to do blight findings of an original district when you did an amendment. So it was a bit of it breaking new ground.
Thanks.
I would just point out on the issue of blight and the implication that one may incorporate unblighted areas into an urban renewal area, that the statute limits the amount of area that can be in an urban renewal area to 15%, as is true as well of the assessed value of all the property in the city. So it would be short-sighted to include blocks you didn't need to include, because it would limit our ability to have urban renewal areas and other areas that we need to have them.
Correct.
That's correct.
Good discussion. Any other from council? Sue? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have to testify Commissioner Scott Andrews, Phil Kalberer, Sandy McDonough, and Mike Andrews.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to the City Council.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners.
Commissioner Andrews.
I am Scott Andrews, President of Melbourne Mark Properties and a PDC Commissioner. I am here today in full support in moving forward on the River District expansion before you today. The appeal of the expansion has created a real problem in the River District urban renewal area. We have two immediate projects that cannot be funded: the Resource Access Center and the new Blanchet House. There are several more in process that would provide much-needed jobs and stimulus to the neighborhood. For example, the Union Station project, which I have a letter in support from Amtrak that I'd like to submit as part of the record today. You're going to be hearing much more about each one of these projects than several others from people who have direct ties to each one of those developments. As you know, at PDC, we've had to give several developers recently more time because they've not been able to find financing. Here we have at least one major project, the Resource Access Center, that's ready to go. The only thing keeping it from coming out of the ground is this appeal. In normal economic times, this would be frustrating. In this economy, it's tragic. There are hundreds of unemployed construction workers, and those jobs multiply into many more as the workers spend in Portland. In addition, our apprentice programs have come to a screeching halt. Programs that have been so successful at getting many more women and minorities into the construction trades. Without projects, many of those apprentices will not have the ability to continue their training and move into the construction industry. So I want to thank you in advance of your support of this important measure and give you the opportunity to hear from folks that were really directly tied to these real important projects.
And Commissioner, thanks for your service, ongoing service on the Portland Development Commission. Thank you. Mr. Kalber.
Mayor Adams, Council, my name is Phil Kalber, president of Kalber Company. I'm on the executive committee of Portland Business Alliance, and I also chaired the Vision Committee of Old Town Chinatown when both the vision plan and the economic development plan were put together, which was adopted by City Council. First, I want to say I'm full support of the amended and restated urban renewal area as being presented. But let's look at some of the issues, particularly those of Friends of Urban Renewal. First was a satellite, and I believe that's been put to bed, and I think the direction of the four at that time is very apropos. Second is tax and revenue sharing. That issue is at the legislature now, and hopefully a good agreement and compromise will be put together for tax and revenue sharing with the counties. The third issue is blight. So let's talk about blight. A few years ago, PDC Commissioner Janice Wilson did an in-depth study of the Central City urban renewal and indicated that the blighted area was Old Town Chinatown and that the funding should go and be concentrated in that area. Why is that so? Old Town Chinatown has a real interesting mix. Two historic districts overlap each other, has height restrictions, seismic restrictions, small parcels make it very difficult for private funding to come together. It is also has a very, very high concentration of social services and low-income housing. In fact, Old Town Chinatown housing and income numbers were used in the early days of the River District to justify what has been invested in that area. I do not regret this because the River District is a shining success example. But blight was not the only reason project by project, and the justification also often came from Old Town Chinatown. Every project in Old Town Chinatown has needed public or urban renewal assistance. Perhaps the gas company is the only example not. Port of Portland is public. Mercy Corps, University of Oregon, great projects that really helped the area, needed subsidies, they needed tax credits, and the like. The League of Women Voters supported the Wilson study and affirmed that the money should be spent in Old Town Chinatown, although they have disagreed with the increase of the tax dollars because of the impact on the county. Hopefully that will be taken care of, but if it's not, there will be no monies available to go into Old Town Chinatown. And the downtown and waterfront urban renewals area is basically finding itself at the end of its time. So Old Town Chinatown is a catch-22. If we don't expand the River District, we will not be part of anything, as the study for the new urban renewal area excludes the Old Town Chinatown area. Important projects, obviously, the RAC, the Asian Market, on block 33, the Blanchet House, the Burnside Couplet, which is part of this plan that the Old Town Chinatown neighborhood put together as integral and was adopted by the City Council. We also need workforce housing like Lewis Lee's project. So it's time to move forward, create jobs, improve neighborhoods, and revitalize important areas of downtown. I ask that you pass this amendment.
Thank you. Ms. McDonough.
Thank you. Mayor Adams, member of council, thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I'm Sandra McDonough, and I'm representing the Portland Business Alliance. The Alliance believes that urban rural renewal is a very important tool that, used appropriately, promotes the economic vitality of our city. Urban renewal dollars are available for investments in infrastructure, housing, social services, and public-private partnerships that help keep our city an economically healthy place to live and work. And right now, we need all the help we can get to keep our city economically healthy. The Oregon Employment Division announced just this week that the state's unemployment rate is now 12.4%. Only Michigan, with the apparent collapse of our auto industry, is in worse shape. And in Portland, unemployment is 12.1%. We need to create jobs, and we have an opportunity to do that right now by adopting these revised findings, which address the issues that have been raised about the River District expansion. We then can then move forward with the important projects that depend on these funds. These findings will allow us to make investments that will help us create jobs quickly. In addition, the investments can be made in undervalued areas, catalyzing private sector investment that increases property value and then returns those properties to the tax rolls so that they can support critical general fund services in all the overlapping districts, including great schools and much-needed human services. And we were very happy to see the legislature adopt a bill that will actually move some of those dollars to the overlapping districts sooner. I also want to state that the Alliance very strongly supports allocation of the funds from the amended River District to the construction of the Homeless Resource Access Center. The RAC is an integral component of our collective efforts to provide a wide range of services to the city's homeless and low-income citizens. The Alliance is a very proud partner in the SAFE program, as you know, and we appreciate our ability to work with the city to expand services to the homeless community, such as day shelters, additional benches, showers, and restrooms. And the RAC is a very important part of that overall plan. We believe it is time to move forward with the River District, and these revised findings should address any issues that have been brought up. So thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Thank you for your testimony. Sue?
The next two are Jeff Bachrach and Mike Andrews.
You can call the third.
And the third is Dan Perchusich.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council. We're glad you're here.
Good morning.
Mr. Bachrach.
Thank you. I'll go first alphabetically, I guess. Oh, no, Mike, you. thank you. I'm Jeff Bachrach. I'm chair of the Housing Authority of Portland and here to speak on behalf of HAP in first and foremost, to support the council in readopting these findings and getting this expansion of the URA back on track. And I will be brief. Obviously, from my perspective as the chair of HAP, is the Resource Access Center project that's already been mentioned several times. It's certainly not the only shovel-ready project ready to go that will be funded by your action today. But at least from HAP's perspective, we like to think of it as the high priority in this package. And I was pleased that other speakers felt the same way. Just very briefly on the RAC, I know this council is well aware of the importance of this project. It was 18 months ago about that the city council at that point, former Mayor Potter and former Councilman Sten, asked RAC to ask HAP to take on the RAC, so to become the developer and ultimately the owner of the project and to add affordable housing on top of it, just to add to the complexity of this project. And so for 18 months, it's been the priority for HAP. Mike Andrews has been the project manager, an enormous amount of time, energy. HAP has been funding the soft costs all along, just institutionally, a lot of focus and energy with a lot of partners, obviously the city, PDC, and others. And I would just briefly like to give a shout out to, although this project began under prior regimes and was handed to us by a former mayor and councilman, I'd like to thank this council, and particularly Mayor Adams and the new Housing Commissioner Fish, and not only bringing continuity to this project, but taking ownership of it, providing leadership. It is an incredibly complicated project, both financially, socially, politically, and keeping it all on track has taken not only the staff work for Mike and others.